Welcome. Do not adjust your sets. This is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, 2023 was tough for a lot of Americans economically. Yeah, we've heard about it. There were many recession fears. Inflation was evident at grocery stores. My food bill still makes me grumble. Housing prices are still sky high. The list goes on and on. But as we near the end of the year, there is some really good news about the economy. Can you believe it?
You don't say.
Yes, we'll get some clarity from Patrick Harker, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, later today.
We may have avoided a recession, Cherry, but a lot of folks listening didn't miss the finale of Succession. TV critic David Bianculli is here to talk about that amazing joke and also the very best in television this year. The Crown, The Bear, Black Mirror, there were a lot of shows to keep up with. Mm-hmm. Send us your top picks or your questions for either of our guests today, Philly Fed President Pat Harker or David Bianculli. Email studio2 at whyy.org or give us a call, 888-477-9499. But first, Cherry, some headlines.
Yeah, a tragedy happened in South Jersey last night. Six ABC's Chopper 6 crash, killing the pilot and the photographer that was on board. It happened sometime around 8 p.m. yesterday evening. The victims had been on their way back from an assignment at the Jersey Shore when the chopper crashed in a wooded area in Burlington County. The crashed chopper was discovered around midnight by state police in New Jersey. And at that point, it was just too dark for them to do any type of investigation. At this point, the NTSB has taken over that investigation. Now, 6ABC, of course, they're in mourning right now. They have not released the names of the crew members who died because they're still notifying family members. But the station said that the victims had a long history at the station and had been part of the Action News team for years. That is such a sad story.
Absolutely. And our condolences to our news partners, to the families. And we will bring you more when we have it on this story. But it's a tough day for, you know, the news community in our region. Also, this morning we heard about formal charges against a man named Elias Diaz. You might not know that name, but you might know his criminal alias.
Yeah.
He is allegedly the Fairmount Park rapist. Mm-hmm. And if you've lived in this region for a while, you'll know that name. Between 2003 and 2007, there were a string of attacks, including a deadly assault against women in and around Fairmount Park. For years, no one knew who was responsible. Now police say this man, Elias Diaz, is responsible. And the way they have gone about determining that, they say, is through DNA evidence. And in fact, it's related to some of the stuff we talked about on the show last week, Cherry. They had DNA from the scene of these crimes. And they were able to, through genealogical research, pinpoint that it was this guy, they believe, Elias Diaz. However, they had no idea where he was. And then there were a string of attacks in
recently
in Pennypack Park in Northeast Philadelphia that he is also allegedly responsible for. And they were able to then realize this was the person that they had been looking for in this cold case from 15, 20 years ago. Pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And I mean, investigators, they sent that DNA to a genealogy lab, and they went through more than 1,000 family members across the mainland, U.S., and Puerto Rico to identify Diaz.
Amazing.
I mean,
amazing.
It was so fascinating and interesting, and kudos to the investigators who combed through all of that to identify this person. Of course, you know, justice has to take its toll. It's due.
Right. Of course. For
but
sure.
It was just so interesting that we talked about the impact of DNA, of all the genealogy information that's now available, and investigators days later able to use that to find this man who has, you know, allegedly caused so much problem and sadness in our region.
It's a new frontier in investigative work for police departments all across the country. In Philadelphia, we've seen several examples of it. The Boy in the Box case, we talked about that.
Yep, identifying this.
This is the latest example of how DNA is completely changing the way investigative work is done, and also the timeline mm-hmm. over which these crimes can, you know, at least conceivably be solved.
And by the way, I had to mention that a couple of years ago, through the use of the DNA that they had, the police were able to use that DNA to create a composite sketch of yeah. the suspect. So DNA is being used in so many ways to help solve crimes. And this is a prime example of that.
A little politics now, Cherry.
Yeah. A new poll from Muhlenberg College shows President Biden and former President Trump in a dead heat heading into the 2024 presidential race here in Pennsylvania. Now, Biden is hovering at about 42% and Trump around 41%. That's among registered Pennsylvania voters. 16% of the respondents chose neither or another candidate with just 1% undecided. So it seemed like a lot of people have their minds made up, at least of those polled. Now, this, the outcome of this closely mimics a survey we saw from Franklin and Marshall College, also here in Pennsylvania. In October, their poll found that Biden was holding a very slight advantage over Trump, 42% to 40%, definitely within the margin of error here. And nearly two-thirds of registered Pennsylvania voters who responded to the poll do not believe that the current president, Biden, deserves reelection. People cited different reasons, like disapproval of his job performance. They also cited his age. And at the same time, Avi, 70% of respondents say former President Trump does not have the temperament to be president. So people are kind of, they don't like either of the candidates, it seems.
You think? Yeah. No, they don't like either candidate. It reminds me a lot of 2016. I'm not saying the result will be the same, but
yeah.
it was a similar situation where there was two very well-known people. Donald Trump, who'd been famous forever, Hillary Clinton, who'd been famous forever. They were both widely unpopular, and it ended up being a very close race here in Pennsylvania. Obviously, people know who the current president is, Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. People know who Donald Trump is. Like you said, 1% undecided. So 16%, neither or another candidate. That is amazing. They also, interestingly, in this Muhlenberg poll, ran Shapiro, Josh Shapiro,
yeah.
as sort of a theoretical candidate just to see what people would say. And he did far better than Joe Biden. It's theoretical candidates are always tricky with polling because, like, you know, they're not being run through the ringer in the same mm-hmm. way. They're not being challenged and pushed in the same way. And they're not getting the negative attention that the actual candidates get. But it was still interesting that sort of generic, well-known Democrat did way better than Joe Biden.
Yeah. And you know, our governor, Josh Shapiro, is still riding high. I think a little bit of that 95. We're going to be talking about
yeah,
that.
But I mean, his numbers were not
and he's
sky
very
high
well known
either,
here.
Though. He was just
yeah.
way better than Biden.
And he's well known here. But it's interesting. We'll see what happens. We have a lot to look forward to in 2024.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a year.
It's going to be a year. Get ready.
All right. Joe Biden acted in one of my favorite shows. He made an appearance in Parks and Recreation. Donald Trump appeared in the movie Home Alone 2. I didn't catch that one. It's been out for a long time. But they recently had a little fun. A sports betting website from North Carolina did the math to figure out how much it would actually cost to recreate Kevin's wayward trip in New York City in Home Alone 2. And it was very expensive, Cherry. That's the upshot. That's pretty much all we have time to do in this segment. I tell you, it was very, very expensive to do what Kevin McAllister did in the 90s.
One quick example. Room service bill in 1992, $967. Today, over $2,000. That's for the same thing.
Lay off the nuts. All right, coming up, Philadelphia Federal Reserve Bank President Patrick Harker. We'll talk a little bit about inflation, state of the economy, all that stuff as we head toward 2024. Email your questions, studio2@whyy.org, or call us 888-477-9499.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome on back into Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Hello, folks. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. For the past few years, there's been a lot of talk about recession. Many economists predicted the United States was headed that way. But now it appears, at least according to those same experts, that maybe we are avoiding that. And as the year wraps up, at least by the standard metrics, our economy appears to be in pretty good shape.
Yes, that means despite the Federal Reserve hiking interest rates to fight inflation, the job market is still strong and inflation is coming down. But I'm not an economist, so...
You're not?
No, Avi, no, I'm not.
All right, you're a lawyer, but that's right. Training, got it.
So, but here to tell us more about how we may have averted a recession, how our economy looks heading into 2024, and how that compares to how businesses and workers in our region are feeling is Philadelphia Federal Reserve President Patrick Harker. In fact, they have a Chamber of Commerce member survey out just today. Patrick, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me back.
So glad to have you. And folks, if you're listening and you have questions about interest rates, wage growth, consumer spending, or anything else you can think of, send them our way. 888-477-9499, Studio 2 at WHYY.org. Patrick Harker, I want to start here. What did the experts and prognosticators miss? Why didn't we tip into recession as many, many very smart people thought we would?
Often we look at historical precedent, right? What happened before? But this was an incredibly unusual situation we found ourselves in going into the pandemic and coming out of it. So all those previous episodes didn't really teach us a whole lot about how to deal with this situation. So I think people just rely too much on the past and not thinking through what we did. We put a lot of money into Americans' hands right, during the pandemic, and that's been spending down over time now. And so that raised inflation pretty dramatically, and we know that, and Americans have suffered for that. The job's not done. Let me be clear. The job on inflation is not done, but we are moving in the right direction. Things are starting to look better and better.
So is the idea now moving forward that what happened over the last few years is maybe not even useful for the next time we come in toward a precipice like this because it was so unusual? Or do you think there are actual lessons that we could take forward from this and apply in the future?
Yeah, there are probably lessons that we can apply. We're in the middle of it right now, so it's hard to know exactly what those are. I mean, God willing, we don't go through another pandemic like we've gone through, and that this really is a one-of-a-kind situation. And I think where we are right now, if I look at myself, I'll just talk for myself. What we were hearing early on when the inflation was rising, we saw the data, but data always lags, right? And what I was hearing from all our contacts throughout the region was, yeah, things are going up faster than the data is showing. The soft data, as we call it, right? What we're hearing now is the opposite. Things are starting to soften in the economy, maybe faster than the data says. I don't want to make that same mistake twice of not relying more on the soft data as opposed to the hard data. And that's why I've been in the camp of let's hold rates where they are for a while. Let's see how this plays out. We don't need to raise rates anymore, in my view.
And so let's talk about this soft landing.
Yeah.
What does that look like in real terms when you combine the hard and the soft data? What is that looking like for us, for folks who may not know what that means?
Yeah. So it's not going to be a nice, smooth, soft landing necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's going to be bumpy. But what it means is that we can keep the labor market strong. Mm-hmm. Now, unemployment will probably tick up. Our forecast is it will tick up a bit. But it's not going to tick up dramatically. And so what a soft landing means is most people can still get a job if they want a job. Most employers can still find the workers they need. And we bring inflation back to our target of 2%. That's what a soft landing means.
Now, does that mean because there's been a lot of caution. And even when you sat down here, Patrick, I said, this is good news, right? And you were like, not so much.
I wouldn't say good.
I'm paid to be a pessimist sometimes.
Because there is this caution. What could go wrong to stop this soft landing?
Oh, there are a lot of things that could go wrong. If you think about what happened going into the pandemic, a pandemic hit us. Then this tragic war in Ukraine. Then the tragedy we're seeing in the Middle East, right? Those things are unpredictable in many ways, but they affect the economy, and we have to adjust to that. We did adjust to these issues. I mean, this is an incredibly resilient American economy. I think you have to step back and look at this and say, this is incredible that we've gotten through this in a position that is still relatively strong. Now, note, there are people who are really suffering. Low-income people are having a hard time paying their bills. This is why we need to get inflation under control.
Let's talk about that topic and the gap between perception of economy and some of these more standard metrics that we use to judge the health of the economy? Because there does seem to be a gap.
Sure.
Why do you think people, in response to surveys, some of this softer data,
right,
will tell you that they don't feel that the economy is as good as those numbers suggest?
I think there are a couple reasons, and there's a lot of research on this. Psychologists and economists have talked about this. One is that it's real. I mean, for people who are where a lot of their income goes to pay the grocery bill, right? They are really seeing the prices not come down. The second is, though, people conflate price level versus inflation. Inflation is how prices are going up or down.
Right.
And people all say, yeah, but the prices are high. The inflation could stop today, but prices will still be high for certain things, right? Like food and other areas. And last one is housing. I mean, you think about the real necessities of life, shelter, food, transportation. Those things have not come down as fast in many cases, like food. It's starting to move in the right direction, and shelter's starting to move in the right direction. And we know we have problems there. We're still shy of a lot of housing units in this country. If you think about this region, we're adding a lot of housing into the region, into this city. But there's still a lot of demand, and so we're not quite meeting that demand yet.
The imbalance continues there.
Correct.
Yeah.
And so let's talk about this report that came out today. You look at business owners in a variety of sectors. What did you all find in the survey?
Well, a couple of things. One, we are starting to see that things are slowing. They are starting to say, yeah, we're probably seeing some slowing. We saw some slowing in 2023, and we're predicting we'll see some more slowing in 2024. But the other thing that we saw is that what was in previous years, what was top of mind to businesses was labor. They couldn't get the people they needed.
Yeah.
That's still on the list, but it's not number one. Number one now is the cost of capital. That is financing their business because we did raise rates.
Yep.
And that's why, again, it's important that we start to move rates down, but do it in a way that we don't have to do it too fast, and we're not going to do it right away. It's going to take some time. We should hold rates where they are and start to bring rates down in order to help those businesses. But again, what we're trying to do is get things in balance, right?
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, as your survey indicated, businesses, we're still talking about labor, but it was side by side with interest rates. And I want to make sure we at least get some of the questions in from our listeners. And you can tie this into the survey as well. This is an email from Jessica. Like many Americans, I'm carrying a pretty sizable balance on my credit card. Yeah. I've seen the interest rate on my card almost double from what it was a few years ago. As the interest rates go down, or I guess Jessica's hoping they go down, can I expect my credit card interest rate to also go down?
It will follow.
Yeah.
So it will follow
as a lagging
over time.
It lags.
So I don't think you're going to see it right away as we – because – the Fed, we control the very, very short end of what's called the yield curve. That is the overnight rate. I mean, the very short end. Banks borrowing overnight. The other rates follow from that, but they do take time.
I got to ask you this question from Chris, who sent an email. He says, what do economic indicators tell us about costs of living across the Delaware Valley? He says, so many are moving to the South for lower taxes and housing availability. Does this population decline risk our fiscal stability? And if local expenses are not competitive, we could see conditions deteriorate and costs rising further. Folks are leaving for better housing options.
That's a really complicated question.
There's
a lot packed in there. Obviously, the cost of living overall is one factor. Mm-hmm. But the other factor, of course, is the jobs that pay the wages that you want in an area that you want to work in. Mm-hmm. So those are balances, the balance that people personally have to make, right? Personal decisions. So while there is some decline in certain sectors, like Pennsylvania, populations in decline, not so much in New Jersey. It's pretty flat.
And Delaware went up a little bit.
So, yeah, it's not uniform even across our region.
I want to bring in an email here from Brian. We have a couple minutes left. Is there a concern that the monetary stimulus policy influenced pockets of the economy, and I think Brian means sectors of the economy, more so than desired? For example, tech, equities, Bitcoin, etc. What's your take on Brian's question there?
So monetary policy is a very blunt tool. Yep. We have one interest rate for everyone.
And the economy is very diverse.
And the economy is very diverse. Yeah. So sure, it's going to affect certain sectors more than others. The ones that really we focus heavily on are things like housing and the necessities of life when we look at inflation. But yeah, sure, it's going to affect different sectors differently.
And we have about a minute and a half left. And, we have the big infrastructure bill, lots of work being done. We saw I-95 have some issues. Josh Shapiro, our governor, got on that. We have work being done here in Philadelphia with the cap. Your thoughts
Multiple caps.
Your thoughts on how all this work on the infrastructure is going to affect our economy.
Really important. And we are behind. I'm an old civil engineer, right? I mean, so the quality of our infrastructure, as graded by the American Society of Civil Engineers, is bad. And it has been bad for a while. So we need to make these investments. But it's not just about repairing and fixing. It's about making it better. It's not just about rebuilding the road. It's about rebuilding communities. Mm-hmm. And so we've done a lot of work in the Philly Fed, and I encourage people to go there, to look at the kind of work, even historical work. It is true that when we build a railroad, there were people on the other side of the tracks. Yeah. When we build a road, there were people on the other side. It affected communities, and in many cases affected communities, particularly communities of color, very negatively in terms of just cutting them off from certain sectors of the city. Those echoes of those decisions are still here, and we've documented a lot of that. So let's take our time to not just patch I-95, but let's think about how we invest in our roads, our transit systems, and so forth,
yep,
to really make a better community.
That's a wonderful place to end.
I think so, too.
Patrick Harker, president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Philadelphia, thanks for joining us again on Studio 2.
Thank you.
And coming up, the best TV shows of this year and what to watch in 2024. TV critic David Biancooley is with us, and we want your favorites. Email studio2@whyy.org.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at pennmedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Avi, I watched a lot of TV this year. A lot of it was great.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. The zombie thriller, The Last of Us, HBO's final season of Succession, the dystopian Black Mirror, even the reality TV version of Squid Games. Very good. Those were some of my favorites.
How about throwing in a comedy every once in a while? Something to lift the mood. I did hear great things about those programs.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of great shows this year, so many streaming services to keep track of. Even with that 148-day writer's strike, there was still a lot of stuff to watch.
Mm-hmm.
So we have brought in an expert I think you know, TV critic and Rowan University professor David Biancooley, to share his top shows from the year, some sleepers that maybe deserved more attention, and a little look forward to what's coming in 2024. David Biancooley, welcome back to Studio 2.
Well, it's really, really nice to be here with you guys.
It's really nice to have you.
I think you're kicking butt on this show.
David, warming us up. I love it. And we want you, friends, to tell us the shows that captured your attention this year. Call us or email us your picks and recommendations. Our phone number is 888-477-9499. You can also email studio2@whyy.org. So, David, lots happened in 2023. We had a writers and actors strike. There was crackdown on streaming subscriptions. What are your big takeaways as far as the industry when we talk about TV in 2023?
Well, the fact that it kept going was amazing with that strike. That strike was really important, what they were fighting for, because the distribution system, the way you can make money as a TV writer, producer, actor, has all changed, because the model that the contracts were still based on back in the 60s, nobody watches TV like that anymore. Mm-hmm. So the rewards aren't there. So they had to fight for it, but it meant we had a tough year in terms of TV, but hopefully it'll be better in terms of the studios for a while and the production, but it'll be leaner We're not. Mm. It's gonna cut down a bit
mm-hmm. on the people. You're saying on the people.
No,
involved
I'm saying on the number of programs that are offered. On the, yeah. And the streaming services are going to start fading or merging.
I wanted to ask about that before we get into specific shows because I thought that would have happened already. Like there, it just seems like there's more and more and more of them, including ones that are free now. There's Freevee and Tubi and Fubi. I mean, it's hard
to
keep track.
Yeah, Tubi and not Tubi.
Yeah, exactly.
That's Shakespeare only. Nobody watches that.
But when is the great merger coming, David? I know you don't have a crystal ball, but I am surprised that there are still so many streaming services.
Well, it took about 20 years with cable television because when cable started, the big dream was, okay, you're going to get a jazz channel. You're going to get a Broadway music channel. You're going to get this. But everybody went after the shares of the biggest parts of the pie. And so everything consolidated. Yep. And so you had to buy eventually, you went from individual services to getting forced to buy packages. That's going to happen here. I imagine it'll probably take 5 years before it all shakes out. But what do I know? I mean, really, what
no,
do I know?
But I am surprised by the pace. You mentioned it took about 20 years on the cable side. Things tend to accelerate with technology. So I just thought it would happen faster. But maybe next 5-10 years, we will see that phenomenon finally take root. That's something I'll be watching for, Cherry.
For sure. But, you know, when we zoom out and think about the business of streaming, the big guys, Netflix, or girls, should I say, Prime, Paramount Plus, Disney.
Public radio overcorrectness. I'm calling it out.
They all still seem to be dominant when it talk about some of the best shows, right? And so I want to start with one of my favorites from this year about a post-apocalyptic Earth, right? And The Last of Us. Huge rage. I want to play this clip. In this clip of The Last of Us, the Earth has been hit by a fungal infection that turned infected humans into flesh-eating zombies.
Wow.
In this scene, Joel and Ellie, the main characters, they talk about how the pandemic started.
So the tainted food all hits the store shelves around the same time Thursday. People bought it, ate some Thursday night or Friday morning. Day goes on. They started to get sick. Afternoon, evening, they got worse. And they started biting. Friday night, September 26, 2003. By Monday, everything was gone.
David, this was definitely the top of my list. And you think about it, I mean, it's, you know, sparked all type of articles about whether or not fungus could really take over the earth. I mean, this had a huge impact.
And for me, it didn't even have the it's an exact same episode that you pulled this clip from. The thing that got me wasn't the new kind of like vegetable zombies that they'd come up with, and the fact that it was based on a video game that I've never played.
I had never heard of it.
But this same episode was mostly a flashback about two characters we'd never seen before, and it was so touching. It's one of my favorite written and acted and presented episodes of the entire year.
Wow.
And it's inside this zombie thing based on a video game.
What distinguished it from other zombie adventures in your mind?
That particular episode, because when I saw the first episode, the whole thing was a prologue to get those two characters together and on their journey.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the journey, the end of the first episode, they think, okay, and it's going to be like zombie and runaway, zombie and runaway, zombie and runaway. Yeah. But it wasn't. And this was so deep that it was basically an unexpected love story over so much time. And where most of these type of shows based on video games will just carnage and death and no problem, this spent an entire hour to make you care about the death of one character.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And really well done.
And I want to zoom out a little bit and talk about this obsession with zombies, because I am obsessed. I mean, one of the ways I rate myself is I ask, would I survive the zombie apocalypse?
Will you?
Today I say yes.
Oh, interesting.
I've developed certain skills. We won't talk about that right now. But I got to ask you, what
I want to, because my answer is always no. In all of these things, what would I do? I would die in the first reel of anything that I watched.
But I want to talk about one of the most famous zombie is The Walking Dead.
Yes.
And there were multiple spinoffs that launched this year from The Walking Dead. The Walking Dead, Daryl Dixon, The Book of Carol, the second, you know, The Walking Dead, Dead City is renewed
is
for a second. Yes, it is so good.
And coming soon, Walking Dead, Blood from a Turnip. You know, they're just squeezing everything they can out of this show.
You're not a fan, I take it.
I'm a fan of The Walking Dead,
yeah.
At least the first 19 seasons.
But I want to ask you about this phenomenon of sort of spinoffs from like amazing series like The Walking Dead. Is this a new trend, and how do you think they do? Because clearly the blood from a turnip.
As we all know that the television universe has expanded and streaming has expanded.
Yeah.
Everybody's trying to get attention for their new stuff, and it's harder and harder. So intellectual property, known titles really go. That's why among the most prominent things shown on TV this year, whether cable or streaming, you know, are either sequels, revivals, or finales to pull people back in for one time.
I want
to
give an example of just such a thing.
Look season at you, five, all prepared.
Season five of Fargo,
yes.
And in this season, John Hamm plays Roy Tillman, an above the law sheriff. In Roy's own reality, he's the judge, the jury, and too often the executioner.
There is no one on God's green earth who is a greater enforcer of the laws of this land than Roy Tillman.
Why do I feel like there's a but here?
But what you need to know is that I am the law of the land. Elected by the residents of this county to interpret and enforce the Constitution given unto us by Almighty God.
Freedom.
Amen.
You know, I hear that word a lot out here. I'm curious what you think it means.
Agent, if you don't know what freedom is, I don't think me saying the words out loud is going to teach you.
Okay, David. Mm-hmm. I love John Hamm, and I loved the original movie by the Coen brothers, Fargo.
Good.
I have no idea why I want to invest more in this sort of Fargo spinoff universe. Can you convince me?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I can convince you. Because there are three instances I can think of in the last 5-10 years when I have come to a new project, a new link, or before that, a DVD that I'm putting in thinking, I'm going to hate this. Mm-hmm. I've got to watch it. Mm-hmm. I've got to write about it. I got to do something, but I am going to hate this. First was Breaking Bad.
Ooh, that's
the description of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, junior high school. I mean, you know, high school teacher dying of terminal cancer, becoming a meth dealer with a former student
so
to do a nest egg for his pregnant wife. It's like, oh my God, I was loving it within 5 or 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We already talked about that the Last of Us and how that surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
But Fargo, I loved the movie like you did, and it was like, and I'd never heard of this guy Noah Hawley, and he wants to reimagine it and do his version, something in the spirit of Fargo.
It just seems like someone's trying to make money off of Fargo. That's what I hear when I hear the description.
Yes, it's like. Okay, somebody's saying, oh, I like Twin Peaks so much, I'd like to do a series
right.
called Twin Peaks in the style of Twin Peaks, but my own thing. It's like, how dare you? You can't do it. I'm telling you, I'm looking you right in the eye. Trust me, radio people, I'm looking him right in the eye.
Both eyes.
Yes, and saying, I loved the first season. And it's a standalone 10-episode thing, so any character can die at any time, and most of them did. You know, and it was like, wonderful. And then he doubled down, kept the money there, did a season two. Completely different characters, stories, setting, just as great. Season three, yes. Season four, yes. Now season five. I am not faking the enthusiasm in my voice for this. I teach this in college as like an example of some of the best TV written today. So if you loved Fargo, it's not a reason to stay away from it. It's a reason to run to it.
Ooh, and let me tell y'all, Dave's body language right now, he had the finger pointing. Yes, I'm going to watch Fargo. Speaking of using big names to get a draw, there's been a few, I think, that did that. And I want to switch our discussion around docuseries at this point. Mm-hmm. Few on my list. I mean, Pamela, Love Story, that was one. Sly about Sylvester Stallone, big names. But one that caught the eye of many is Netflix's Beckham docuseries.
Yes.
About David and Victoria Beckham. And I want to play a clip in this scene from Netflix. From the show, Victoria Beckham seems to misrepresent, it was so funny to me, her family's economic status, and she gets corrected by her husband. Take a listen to this.
We're very working class.
I am being honest.
What
car did your dad drive you to school in?
So my dad...
No, one answer.
My dad...
What car was it?
All right, it's not a simple answer because...
What car did you... Get your dad to drive.
It depends.
No.
Okay, what in the car? 80s, what? My dad had a Rolls Royce.
OMG. So that's working class. I didn't know that you could drive a Rolls Royce. It was a used Rolls. And so just talk about docuseries. First of all, your impression of Beckham, and then are there others that you think had this type of draw?
Now, Beckham, this is an example of why, as a TV critic, I haven't given up, but I'm not as confident as I used to be because Beckham slipped by me for a week or two. I can't see everything before it premieres. There's too much. And so any list that I give of the best of the year is not what it used to be. The authoritative, this is the best television offered over a 12-month period.
It's the best of what you saw.
It's the best of what I saw. Yeah.
And it's so much to see.
But Beckham, it's like, at first, one of the reasons why I didn't get to it, it's like, oh, Beckham sports, big deal. The first time I heard somebody whose opinion I really trusted saying, oh, no, this is a really good one. And it is. I mean, watch Beckham. It's really, it's so personal. Fisher Stevens, an actor, is the guy who was the director of this. And he obviously had a great relationship with both of them. And he interviews them together, as in that clip. Or actually, David Beckham is just peeking from the other room.
Yeah.
But interviews them direct, like they're... suspects in a murder. He interviews them separately and they tell different stories about the same thing.
Well, it's tough with sports docs because they often end up being like hagiography, basically. Yeah. Like, hey, look at this amazing person who did all this amazing stuff. It is tough to tell a good personal story in a sports doc, but everything I've heard about Beckham suggests they pulled it off.
It's amazing. At one point, you feel so bad for him, like he's the most hated person in the whole country, and how he comes back from that. And it's really interesting how characters that you think halfway through this multi-part documentary, oh, that's a bad guy, that's a bad coach, and then re-enters the story in a whole different way.
Yes. I want to read some of our listeners' favorites because they've been sending them in. Joan Marie sent an email, says she's got a comedy for me to watch on Netflix called Fisk. Joan Marie also loves The Crown on Netflix.
Yeah.
What a wonderful, well-done, consistent series that has been. No one was presented as the villain, just people trying to do their best. An interesting take on The Crown. We also got Steven mentioned The Last of Us, one of the best shows I've ever seen. Emil, a bit of a hater, said it was a weak year, basically The Bear and a mountain of mediocrity.
The Bear was wonderful. I disagree about the rest, but The Bear was terrific.
The Bear, it's not the first season of The Bear now, so tell me how that show has evolved. And for folks that don't know The Bear, it's about a restaurant owner in Chicago trying to kind of rescue his family's dying restaurant.
Yeah, it stars Jeremy Allen White, who was so good in Shameless, the American version of Shameless. And this show just got stronger and stronger. In the second season, it had three different standalone episodes that I thought were terrific television, all in the same season. And I don't want to do any spoilers. You just start watching this series from the beginning, but I will tell you how much I loved it. Is that by the end of the second season, if anybody is totally fluent, and this is not a spoiler, there's one scene where the assistant chef makes an omelet for somebody. All right.
Yes.
So I took weeks perfecting that omelet.
I have seen that omelet on menus in the real world, David.
See?
People love that. It's got, was it Gruyere and potato chips?
Yes. It was sour cream and onion potato chips crushed on top of a regular straight omelet with just a soft cheese that's sort of extruded in, like, you know, and then folded over. Fabulous.
Edible television. That's the direction we need to move in.
I love it. Some of the other shows that folks like, someone else loved The Bear. We loved Reservation Dogs. Mo was also very good. It was from 2022, but just saw it. That's from Jennifer. And so that pivoted me to another question. I wanted to talk diversity a little bit because the 10th annual Hollywood Diversity Report came out. They said with findings that more top shows featured racially, ethnically diverse casts, that authors of the report also found that casts finally reached more representative levels of race and ethnicity across all platforms. And it seems like viewers like it. Your thoughts on that? And Reservation Dogs is one of those examples. Beef, another example.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Beef. Yeah, Beef is one. I mean, you look at the prominence of people in even The Bear and things like that. It's wonderful. I used to worry in the old days, because I've been doing this a long time, and when they first started noticing, oh, my God, like everybody on the Mickey Mouse Club, you know, all the Mouseketeers were white in the first time around. And that would never happen again. But even so, it was like, okay, we're going to have one Asian American comedy. It was like Mr. T and Tina. And then that was enough. Mm-hmm. And my thing back then was, it can't just be a quota, because if the show is terrible, then, oh, yes, you can say we've got this minority represented in this show. And so we're done with that. It's got to be the quality of performances, and you've got to be more or less colorblind. And it is finally happening.
Yeah, and it's like the shows are about different stories, all different types of people. And it seems like the stories that are more diverse are getting higher views and higher ratings. So I feel like that's winning.
There's one show now. This, again, it's a movie that was shown in theaters for like a day and a half, made by Netflix. Mm-hmm. Now it's on Netflix. So it's one that I don't include as a television original, but it's Leave the World Behind.
Yes. Oh, I watched that over the weekend.
Okay, all right, okay, all right, okay. Yes. You loved it, didn't you?
I absolutely did.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, it was just, I won't spoil it,
was
because
it the
it's just
Ethan Hawke one? I'm thinking of something.
Ethan Hawke, Julia Roberts.
Yes, and Mahershala
Ali.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Yes. Who shows up at this house, and in his first scene, you know,
the tension.
It's a non-white person showing up at a house in the middle of the night, and it's scary. He's wearing a tuxedo.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
You know, an expensive car outside.
Yes. Yes. And it's like, it wouldn't be the same show if it were colorblind, but it uses
such a
the
good show.
racial and racist sub themes so brilliantly.
Hmm. And then they all end up, anyway, yes. It's a good,
don't
and
spoil
it's,
for
it's
me.
About the end of the
yet.
World. It's good.
No.
It's
I just want to backtrack a little bit, because we have an interesting comment from Brian, because Brian is clearly
That's
listening.
Just like Brian, isn't it?
My dad's name is Brian. Maybe this is my dad.
Ooh.
So he worries about one-sided docuseries like Beckham or the Taylor Swift one.
Good question.
Or like the Beyoncé project, when the folks who are profiled are sort of producers themselves or are involved in that end of it. And we do see this a lot. I remember the Michael Jordan Last Dance series. He was certainly involved in green lighting certain footage. Although I thought that was a good project. I mean, that does seem to be a trend where it's a famous person, and we are obsessed with fame right now, David, who is involved not just as the subject, but also as kind of the overseer of the project.
It's a great question and a great point. And again, it's like you can't look at it just like a quota. You can't say all of these are bad.
Right.
And so Beckham, believe me, David Beckham does not look good in a lot of this documentary.
Yeah.
That obviously the decision was made to tell the story, warts and all. One that I feel matches what he's saying, where one side got to say so much and leave so much else out, was the documentary that was done about Woody Allen on, I think it was HBO, I can't remember.
Interesting.
But it was like, okay, I know there are absolutely two sides to that story, but it seemed like you weren't even allowing the other side
not engaging with it,
to be heard. But most of the time when you get documentaries, there's MGM Plus. I can't remember the last time I watched MGM Plus.
Didn't know it existed.
See,
until
I didn't know until today. Yeah.
In March, Susan Lacy, the woman who did so many great documentaries, artistic documentaries for American Masters, is doing a two-part documentary on Paul Simon.
Oh.
So I'm really looking forward to that, but I don't know until I see it whether it's going to be, you know, so approved that it's going to be
whitewashed. They're going to build a bridge over those troubled waters, or are we going to dive right in, David? You know,
there you go.
And I want to go over a couple more. We had Gilded Age, which is a show that I really like. Gardens pointed that out. Buffy the Vampire Slayer reruns. Who knew that? Imelda pointed that one out. And the email from Howard says, two excellent, if darker picks, Fellow Travelers and the HBO documentary Murder in Boston were two of the best I've ever watched this year. That's according to Howard. But I have one that I love, and I have a clip. Black Mirror.
Oh,
I love that show.
Thank you
okay.
For me too.
And this is let me set the clip up. It's in episode one of season six. Joan, played by Annie Murphy in this scene, finds her life being streamed for viewers in real time. She's sitting at a lawyer's office when she learns that she signed her life story away to the corporation.
Legally, the Streamberry Corporation can do this.
What? How?
Trust me, I'm as shocked as you are.
But the show is using my life. It's my name, it's my career, it's me. They're using me, so...
And you assign them the right to exploit all of that.
What? When?
Terms and conditions.
I have never seen this before.
You have. You just haven't seen it printed out before. All of that would have popped up on your phone or whatever when you first signed up to Streamberry. And you clicked accept.
And, you know, I know we only have a couple minutes left in the show, but your take on this and then this whole idea of, you know, folks having the fears of real life, when real life meets fiction, that continuously happens at Black Mirror.
Yeah, that episode of Black Mirror, Joan is Awful, actually predicted the encroachment of AI in creative affairs. I mean, really cannily, and made fun of Netflix while it was doing it, and Netflix was the network presenting it.
So good.
Black Mirror is brilliant, and I love anthology shows. It's why I love Fargo, is that, you know, when you're watching a show where the character doesn't have to live, you know, the stakes are automatically higher, and it's great.
Okay, a few more I want to read in here. Katie loved Telemarketers, the most insane and perfect documentary I've ever seen. Jacob loved Dave, which stars a Philly area native, Lil Dicky. Miles loved Scavenger's Reign. But let's look forward now in our last couple minutes to 2024. David, what are you really looking forward to?
Well, I've already said
The Paul Simon one, yeah?
The Paul Simon one. Mm-hmm. On the very first or second day of January, there's on Fox Broadcast TV.
Wow.
This may be the first thing we've talked
about.
How
do I get there?
Broadcast television.
How do I get there?
They're doing a two-hour documentary about the TV series MASH.
Oh.
On Fox?
On Fox. You know, because it was a Fox production originally, not Fox, but I mean Fox the corporation. But they're getting together whoever's not dead, and they're talking... You know, they're talking
Alan
MASH.
Alda, yeah,
and that the finale of that show remains the highest viewed scripted program ever shown on television. So I'm looking forward to that. But I want more Black Mirror. I want more Fargo. You know, I'm ready. And
what are you going to miss the most that ended? Because like we got Succession ended, Barry ended, because you just mentioned finales and MASH. What do you think you're going to miss the most that ended in 2023?
Succession, probably.
Yeah, that was so good. I could have spent more time with those people.
Yeah,
you know, the whole idea of Succession is you could spend time with the next generation because that is the succession. Except they failed at Succession. They didn't succeed.
Well, look, if The Walking Dead is any guide,
I know.
Perhaps there will be spinoffs from Succession. They'll be succeeding 10 or 20 years from now. You never know,
yeah,
David.
Yeah, and the brothers, I mean, there's a lot of, there's spinoff potential, I think.
There's money to be made at the very least. I don't know if the creators want it to happen. But
if I have 10 seconds left, the second season of Fargo, it starts off with a great role by Kieran Culkin, who was
in Succession.
So you can hit two birds with one stone there.
Perfect.
And we will leave it there. David Bean Cooley is professor of television studies at Rowan University and founder and editor of TVWorthWatching.com and guest host and TV critic for Fresh Air. We really appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much. That seemed like 1 minute. You guys are great.
Oh, gosh. Please come back. I love talking TV with David.
I do too.
The passion, you know.
And now I have a little list. I have a little list.
That's our radio show for today. It's over. Our producers are Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Charlie Kyer masterfully engineered today's program from Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thank you so much for joining us today.